welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. I really appreciate your support by downloading the podcast file and by listening as well. Special thank you also to everybody who has written me questions in for this week. We're going to be answering three listener questions this week, two of them having to do with ground strokes, one of them having to do with your take back on your ground strokes. Should you be using a loop or taking the racket straight back? So we'll be having a technical discussion there about that. We're also going to be discussing how to deal with a shoulder-high ball or a high ground stroke in general, one that you want to attack on, but how do we do that and still maintain consistency? Lastly, we're going to talk about where to go to find better practice partners. As you improve in your game and you start to move up in level, it can become a little more difficult to find good quality hitting partners who are at your level or even a little bit above to challenge you. So we're going to talk about how to find good practice partners as well. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, let's get started with our first topic here, which has to do with the take back on your ground strokes. And we're going to discuss the differences between taking the racket straight back and also using more of a loop backswing. And this question comes to us from Tomas in Florida, who is a longtime listener. Always great to hear from you, Tomas. He wrote on the forums and said, "Hi, Ian, before my question, I just wanted to give you a short background. I had a private lesson last year when I was in the process of changing my swing from a flat swing of the 80s to a more modern swing with topspin. The teacher promoted a loopy take back, so that's how I started. This was almost a year ago. Gradually over the months, my loopy take back has turned into a straight take back without even thinking about it. Still, I end up with the racket below my aimed point where I hit the ball, so I have a racket path from low to high as I hit the ball. But I'm still wondering how important the actual path of the take back is. Does a loopy take back have any advantages compared to a straight take back? Thanks in advance, Tomas." Well, sure, Tomas, again, good to hear from you. And that's a good question. And this is something that over the years I've actually kind of changed my opinion on bit by bit. I think that in order to learn a topspin path with your racket, especially when you're used to hitting more flat, a lot of times it's good to start off just dropping your racket and just taking it straight back down to the bottom of your swing where you want to swing from, up towards the ball. It's a good way to get a feel for where the racket needs to go in order to create topspin in general. However, since you've already gone through that process and you're creating some topspin already, more of a loop is good, and we're going to get into exactly why. However, what I don't like is an actual loop where your racket is actually going upwards and around in a big circular path that's usually unnecessary. Let's get into the details here and really get specific and talk about the take back on your ground strokes, both your forehand and the backhand. I don't like a straight take back ultimately in terms of a long-term goal and in achieving your potential as a tennis player. I don't like taking the racket straight back, and I don't like a quote-unquote loopy one either. What I like is something in between. What the vast majority of professional players and high-level players in general, meaning 5.0 and above, the vast majority of those level players do something very close to what I'm going to describe here. I'm going to give you a four-step process that most upper-level players, that they're doing these four things. And they might have some small idiosyncrasies or kind of personal flair added to this as well. But they're going to follow these four basic steps. First of all of these players start from a ready position. And that's pretty basic. So your feet shoulder width apart, your hands in front of you, both hands on the grip in a good ready position. From that spot, from that position, most high-level players take that position, and when they identify which side the ball is coming to, their right side or their left, they make a unit turn with their body from their ready position towards that side. So their entire ready position, their hands, their shoulders, their stance, all rotates 90 degrees to whichever side the ball is coming on. As that unit turn happens, this is step number three, as that turn is occurring, as they're rotating their body to whichever side the ball is coming on, they also bring their hands up to about shoulder height, and the tip of their racket is pointing up towards the ceiling or sky. So we've got a vertical racket with the tip of it pointing upwards towards the ceiling or sky as they bring the racket up and as they turn their body to the side. This all usually happens in one smooth motion, getting their core turned to the side, bringing their hands up to about shoulder height or so. And a lot of pros, you'll see variations in this, but the vast majority of them, their racket does travel upwards from their ready position. Ready position, typically, you'll see their hands right about waist level or so, and on either side, forehand or backhand, they will take their hands up to about shoulder height. So we're talking about a foot and a half or maybe 2 feet at the most, their hand is coming up. When I hear the phrase loopy backswing, in my mind, I see a much larger, more defined upward path with the racket than that, as opposed to taking the hands and racket up to chest or shoulder height. When I hear loopy, I see the hand coming up well above the height of your shoulders and then going back and around and making a big circle with the racket. That's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is a little more abbreviated, although ultimately it is creating a circular path. So again, from the beginning, ready position, unit turn with the entire body, with the core. As that unit turn is occurring, the hands come up to around shoulder height, maybe chest height, depending on the player, but they do come upwards. And again, another important part of this is the racket should be pointed up towards the ceiling or sky. The tip of the racket should be pointed upwards. The last step here is when the timing is right, the racket goes back, drops down, and then swings upwards towards the ball in one smooth motion. And this is where people who teach kind of a bigger loop have it right. I like the timing and the smoothness and the rhythm of a loop, of a circular backswing. Those are the pros of a circular backswing, and we're going to go over those specifically as opposed to a straight backswing in a couple of minutes. But that's the good part about a loopy swing, a loopy backswing. However, I don't want the size of a, quote, loopy backswing. That's the important determinant here is the size of the actual loop. What I see most good players doing and what I do myself is take the hands up to about chest or shoulder height as opposed to higher and longer than that. And I said for step number four there, when the timing is right, the racket will go back and down and then up towards the ball. There are different timings for different circumstances with the ball. For example, if it's a really easy shot, if the ball is moving slowly and the player has a lot of time to get there, a lot of times you'll see the players go through those three steps right away. They'll rotate their body to the side. They'll bring their hands up to about shoulder height or so, and they'll hold the racket there as they approach the ball. And then as they get to the ball and it's time to make the swing, at that point they'll take the racket back, drop it, and make the swing all in one big smooth motion. Other times, when the ball is coming very quickly, as with, let's say, a return of serve, or maybe their opponent has hit an aggressive ground stroke, a powerful ground stroke, you'll see them do this entire process in one smooth motion, oftentimes very quickly. They'll rotate to the side, bring their hands up, take the racket back, drop the racket, and make an upward swing at the ball. And all of that will happen all at once. You can do either one and time it differently depending on the circumstances that the ball is presenting to you. But the important parts here are getting rotated and not making too big of a loop with your hand as you go through your backswing. Now, through this process, the racket does make a circular path, as I mentioned briefly before. So we are technically making a loop, but the phrase loopy, to me, just means bigger. And I don't want a big, exaggerated loop. It's unnecessary, and it's more difficult to time with the ball if you're trying to make a large motion with your racket back behind you. What I'm talking about is more controlled. It's a more compact loop, and you'll see very few pros who don't do it this way, the way that I'm describing, on both the forehand and the backhand side, including the one-handed backhand. This is how you see the vast majority of upper-level players prepare for the incoming ball. Just to wrap this up, hopefully all that makes sense, Tomas, and you're getting a good visual picture. And by the way, as far as visual pictures go, and that's obviously the drawback of a podcast, is you don't get any visuals, go ahead and go to YouTube or look at some photos, sequence photos of professionals making their swing, and you'll see all these steps that I'm talking about with virtually every pro. There are a couple exceptions to that. For example, Serena Williams takes her two-handed backhand, pretty much just takes it straight back and down. She'll turn to the side and take her racket right to the bottom of her swing. And she doesn't have really any kind of loop to talk about or a loop to speak of. It's pretty much just a straight take back. So there's a couple of exceptions like that. But by and large, all of the pros are doing the process that I'm talking about. The reason why a straight take back isn't as good is there's not as much rhythm to it. First of all, if you just turn to the side and take your racket straight back, you're pretty much just sitting there waiting, and there's no way to build momentum up and rhythm with the racket. There's less of a timing and rhythm aspect to it when you take it back and wait and then just swing upwards and forwards towards the ball. The racket doesn't gather as much momentum as well, which I just touched on a second ago. When you start with your hands up and wait for the ball and start dropping them before the ball gets there, you're building up momentum with the racket and racket head speed, and it's easier to build a faster swing when you start with your hands up and then you drop them down and take that momentum and move that momentum back up towards the ball again. It's easier to build racket head speed when you have some loop there. And lastly, the third reason why straight back isn't as good is it's just a weaker position with your body. When you take, let's say, a forehand, which I believe is the specific stroke you were talking about, Tomas, was your forehand. When you take your dominant hand, your racket hand, and just take it straight back, you are detaching the racket from your core. You're detaching it from the biggest part of your body. When you take both your hands and take them up to shoulder height, you keep the racket close to you, and there's still a very good, strong connection between the racket and your core. And as the ball gets to you, you've got a nice, strong connection there between the racket and your body, and it's easier to drop and accelerate the racket when it's closer to your body, as opposed to taking your hand and immediately moving it all the way back away from your body. I just don't like that position as much. It's not as strong of a position. There's not as much rhythm to it, and your racket, it makes it more difficult to accelerate your racket as well. So, Tomas, hopefully that answers your question fully, and hopefully I described it in detail enough that you get a good visual picture for what I'm talking about. When it comes down to it, yes, I do want some circular motion there. However, I don't want a big, exaggerated loop. Your hands should just be coming up to shoulder or chest height, and with the racket tip of the racket pointing upwards towards the sky. And then from that position, drop your racket and make your topspin swing. If you have any further questions on that, feel free to let me know. And hopefully that's helpful to you. All right, let's get going with our next question, which also has to do with ground strokes. This question comes to us from Cash with a K, who lives in California. He wrote to me and said, "I hit really hard ground strokes, but when it comes to high balls, I struggle a little bit. I'm really consistent in general from the baseline, but I want to know how to put high balls away hard without hitting lawn or into the net. People who play me know I have strong ground strokes, so when they are on the run, they just lob it back. I want to capitalize on this point." Well, that's a great question, Cash. And Cash is a 4.5 level player, so pretty high level tennis player. So he's being pretty aggressive on a regular basis. However, he's running into trouble dealing with a higher shot, usually a weaker shot that's bouncing up higher. And he's trying to put that away, but still be consistent. And this is a shot that comes up often at this level of play. A 4.0 or 4.5 level player is going to get this type of opportunity all the time. And if you don't make a good technical swing at the ball, when you're attacking and being aggressive, if you don't do it correctly, you will be inconsistent and you'll end up giving away points, which is very frustrating when you had the upper hand in a point and you end up just giving it away. So we definitely want to be able to get a good handle on this and do it correctly so that we can move forwards and continue to advance. If you want to make the jump up to a 5.0 level player, Cash, which I assume you do, this is the type of shot that really makes the difference between a 4.5 and a 5.0, at least from the baseline. 5.0 level player is able to take that weaker, higher bouncing shot and consistently just put it away, no questions asked, or at the very least, really hit a pressuring shot consistently. It doesn't necessarily have to be a winner, but a 5.0 level player is able to take those easy shots and really capitalize the vast majority of the time. So here's three suggestions on making your high ground strokes better. The first one I'm going to talk about is by far the most important that you understand. And at your level, it's very tempting to start taking these easy shots and just not necessarily going for broke, but really being very aggressive, really to a fault, where you're just going for too much. And this first topic I'm going to talk about really is very important as it has to do with that. The first topic I'm going to talk about in hitting this shot better is use of topspin. We need to continue to hit topspin, even though this is a pretty easy shot, and you're a relatively high level player. We need to still add some rotation to this ball in order to keep our margin for error. If you continue to miss long or into the net, you're definitely hitting too flat of a ball. When you hit flat and hard and straight, it leaves you with very little margin for error since the ball is traveling straight. When your swing path is flat and straight, the ball will travel straight. And that means that you really have to hit it just about right. You've got to hit just about a perfect shot. If it's just a little bit too high, it goes too far because we're just driving it straight and you're hitting relatively aggressively. If it's just a little bit too low, then it's not going to clear the net. So we need some kind of curve. We need some kind of arc in the ball. And we need that in order to keep this a consistent shot, even as you try to attack. So it's very important that you continue to hit with some topspin. When attacking on a high, weak shot, you shouldn't be trying to hit a loopy ball. We're not trying to hit a rally ball here with heavy topspin. But on the other hand, I never want you to be hitting dead flat either. That's just too low percentage of a shot, and I don't want you to swing that way, really, on just about anything. There are some exceptions to that. If the ball is extremely short and just extremely easy, there will be times that you can pretty much hit dead flat and straight into your opponent's side of the court, assuming it's high enough and you're close enough. But for the most part, you're going to be adding some topspin to these shots. So get out and practice with a ball machine. And you need to find the right combination of spin and drive so that it's both a strong and aggressive shot, but without killing your margin for error and hitting the ball straight and flat. We need to find that good ratio of spin to drive. I still want you to hit the ball strongly. We should be attacking on this, but I don't want you to be killing your consistency and giving away free points. That's not how you're going to win matches. I would rather you hit less aggressively and put the ball in play than be going for a put-away shot and hitting the ball flat and only making half of them. That's just not going to work out for you. So you should be still swinging upwards at the ball to achieve some curve and some topspin to keep the ball in play consistently. You're just going to be swinging that much faster than on your typical rally ball. We're going to swing at a faster pace. If on a rally ball you're swinging at 70%, maybe 75% or so with some good topspin to keep it consistent. On this attacking shot, we're still going to hit with topspin, probably a little bit less than your typical rally ball, but we're going to be hitting at 80% or 85% to make it a more aggressive shot, but still with some curve to keep it consistent. That's my first point, and probably the most important one. Secondly, don't take the ball any higher than shoulder height. Making contact above shoulder height is usually pretty uncomfortable for most people, and it's very difficult to control the ball when you allow your contact point to be up that far away from your body. Also, it's very difficult to hit very much topspin when it's that high, since you really can't swing upwards past the ball from the point of contact. Most topspin ground strokes, well, not most, on every topspin ground stroke, the racket continues to move upwards past the point of contact. And if you're making contact above shoulder height, well, you just don't have that much reach to get much higher than that. So it just becomes a very difficult shot to hit. So don't allow the ball to get any higher than shoulder height. Lastly, my last tip to you is still pick a safe target. And safe is a relative term, but you really shouldn't, at your level, Cash, and if we're swinging at 80% or 85%, you shouldn't be aiming any closer than 5 feet inside either line, period. If you're aiming any closer than 5 feet inside the sideline or 5 feet inside the baseline, that's too aggressive of a target, and you're going to make too many errors. Oftentimes, higher level junior players like yourself assume they're good enough to pretty much literally aim for the lines on an easy shot, like what you're talking about. And they think that's reasonable, but it's not. You're gonna make too many errors that way. Give yourself some room for error and make a good aggressive swing. What I'm not telling you here is that I want you to play it safe necessarily and be tentative. That's not what I'm asking you to do. I don't want you to hit a loopy shot with a lot of topspin and make it just like any other rally ball. No, I do want you to drive it. I do want you to hit it powerfully. And I'm not asking you to aim for the middle of the court, but I am asking you to give yourself margin for error by using some topspin, by having a good contact point about shoulder height, and by picking a target that is appropriate. 5 feet inside the line, that's plenty of space to still hit a great shot. Maybe not a winner every single time. You still will hit winners aiming 5 feet inside the line, especially if you put your opponent out of position on the shot before it. But don't view this as a shot you have to hit a winner on every time in order for it to be effective. Set yourself up with that good aggressive shot. Follow it into the net and put the next shot away if you don't put it away outright your very first try. So Cash, those are my thoughts for you. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts back. Hopefully that makes sense. And give me some feedback and let me know how you're doing with this. Thanks very much. All right, time for our last question of the show today. This question also comes to us from Cash in California. And he sent me a question having to do with finding better practice partners. Especially as you continue to advance and become stronger, it can become more and more difficult to find good people to hit with. If you're just getting started and you're a 2.5 or maybe a 3.0 level player, it's not terribly difficult to find somebody that's pretty close to your level and is appropriate to practice with, really just by going to your local park and hitting on public courts. However, if you're a 4.0 or a 4.5, certainly a 5.0 level player, the number of people that are around your own level just begins to drop off pretty quickly. And so you really have to get out and try to find more appropriate practice partners in order to give yourself the best practice possible. So Cash wrote to me in a separate question and said, I am the number two player in my high school right now until I challenge for the number one. And the number one guy has gone downhill since last year, and I have gone way up. I'm having a hard time finding someone to hit with on the team. No one can get past five shot rallies with me hitting hard, or at least controlled. If they do get past five shots, it becomes a moonball / topspin lobbing game. This problem occurs outside the team also, with the exception of three players. How do I find someone good to play with? Well, I followed up to that question and simply asked him, well, how many tournaments did you play in all of last year? And he wrote to me back and said, last year I only played a few tournaments. I was about a low 4.0 player last year, And now that I have gotten better, it has gotten really hard for me to find somebody to play with. As of yesterday, I became number one varsity for my school, and the only guy that is a challenge to me is the number two guy, and he doesn't want to play me because he wants to practice and get an advantage over me. I beat the number three guy 6-0. I heard your podcast about picking one shot to work on while hitting with lower level players. Well, I'm tired of doing that. I want to play someone where I can go all out. All right, Cash. Well, I can understand your frustration for sure. And it's a shame your number two player doesn't want to hit with you. And his logic is extremely flawed that he doesn't want to play with you so that he can go and practice in order to get better to beat you. It seems to me that the best way to get better at beating you would probably be to play you, but who knows? Maybe that's just me. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this. And even at a 4.5 level player where you're living currently, there are a lot of players right under your nose that are going to be a big challenge to you and could probably even beat you easily. You might be surprised to hear that. But it sounds like most of your competitive experience has been within your high school. And high school teams and high school tennis in general is typically, it's very well insulated from the outside competitive tennis world. And if you get out and start exploring tournaments, organized USTA tournaments, it is a whole nother ballgame. It's completely different tennis when you go out and venture into the actual upper level players that hang around tournaments and USTA events. And so the two biggest pieces of advice I can give you are, first of all, get out there and start playing more tournaments, as many tournaments as possible, as many as you can possibly do. That is going to be by far the biggest way for you to jump up to the next level. You living in California, and Cash's location is close to San Francisco. I just took a couple minutes and went over to USTA's website and looked at their tournament link, looked at the schedule for your area in April and March. In March and April, the next 2 months coming up after this month, just in Northern California, just in cities around your area, around the San Francisco area, there are 38 different junior tournaments. There's almost enough tournaments that you could play one every single day of the month for the next 2 months. Of course, they're all centered around weekends, so you couldn't actually do that, but you get my point. There's a lot of opportunities for you to get out and play the best players in your area. And if you go out there and play the higher level tournaments, you will have no problem finding players that can just crush you. And I'm not saying that to discourage you or to belittle your improvements, because obviously you've improved very quickly over the past year, and you should be very proud of that. Now, to take it to the next level, and don't just be content being the best person at your high school, which it sounds like you're obviously not, and that's great. It sounds like you still have the drive to continue to improve, and that's great. It's good. It's great for me to hear. I'm encouraged to hear that that you're not satisfied with that. Now, the next level is to get out there and play tournaments. Play the kids that this is what they do every weekend. They get out there and they drive 10 hours to the next city. They play a tournament, go back home, practice all week, work out, and then drive 10 hours again to another city and play. You're going to find kids that have more dedication and work ethic than you've ever seen in your life just playing high school tennis. So get out there and play tournaments. That's by far the biggest thing you can do to improve your game. Besides that, if you're not a member at a club already, go check out your local tennis club, and you're going to find that's where the serious players are. Not in high school, but at a tennis facility, at a private club. And you'll find club programs and academies as well, where people who take it very seriously are there training on a daily basis. If you don't have the financial means to be able to do something like that, the tournaments is probably going to be your best bet. And through either tournament or club participation, you can start meeting people in your area that are very highly qualified to hit with you, trust me. And you can just start gathering phone numbers and names. And once you get a good list going, you can start calling those people and hitting with them on public courts. during the week or during the weekend. And that's how you can start kind of building a network of players, kids that are around your age and around your level or higher than your level that you can get out and hit with and continue to improve your game. But the main point is, Cash, that you need to get outside of your little bubble of high school tennis. You need to venture out away from that and start going where the good players go. And that's going to be USTA tournaments and clubs. Actual tennis facilities, clubs that are focused around tennis and have coaches there and pros, and that's where the good players are going to gravitate towards, and that's where you want to spend your time from now on if you're really serious about improving your game. Well, Cash, great to hear from you, and I hope you continue to work hard, and I hope you take my advice and get out there and start experiencing tennis at a higher level. That's my goal for you, and I'm sure it is your own goal for yourself as well. Definitely continue to let me know how you're doing, and best of luck to you. All right, well, that brings episode number 54 of the Essential Tennis Podcast to a close. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. Hopefully the information that I gave you today was helpful and at least gave you something to think about, if not some new ideas and things to try yourself, and hopefully some motivation to get out there and work on your own game. The weather hopefully will start warming up for most of the country soon, and I expect people to start asking more questions soon as they get out there and start to play more. I look forward to things warming up here in Maryland as well. All right, well, take care everybody this week. And good luck with your tennis.